This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. Justin Timberlake, at age 32, is a multimedia star performer. In movies, he's gotten critical acclaim as a dramatic actor, in The Social Network and elsewhere. On television, he's one of the all-time best hosts of Saturday Night Live and has just completed a week of appearances on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. In 2011, he landed on the International Best Dressed list. And in music, where he first made his mark as a singer, he's released a new album called The 2020 Experience. Here's the hit single, Suit and Tie.
I can't wait till I get you on the floor good looking. Hey, going hot, so hot, just like an oven. And I'll burn myself, but just had to touch it. But it's so fine, and it's all mine. Hey, baby, we don't mind all the watching. Ha, cause if they study close, real close, they might learn something. And as long as I got my suit and tie, I'ma leave it all on the floor tonight. And you got fixed up to the nines. Let me show you a few things. All dressed up in black and white, and you're dressed in that dress I like. Love is swinging in the air tonight. Let me show you a few things. Let me show you a few.
Justin Timberlake got his first taste of pop stardom as one of the young performers on Disney Channel's The New Mickey Mouse Club, along with Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, and Ryan Gosling. He hit the top of the pop charts as a member of the boy band NSYNC, then went solo as a singer in 2002. He's hosted Saturday Night Live 5 times now. When Terry Gross spoke to Justin Timberlake in 2010, she asked him about one of his memorable appearances on that show, in a music video that soon went viral.
So there's a Saturday Night Live song I want to ask you about, and this song is just so famous now, and I can't really say the full title of the song, but this is this is something that you did with Andy Samberg, and it's a parody of those narcissistic songs and videos in which the male singer thinks that the greatest gift he could give to a lady is his very special lovemaking. So
yes,
this song and video
that
is
was
about,
very eloquently put.
Thank you. This song and video is about presenting his girlfriend. I think it was right before Christmas that you did this. So the song and video is about presenting his girlfriend with his manhood in a gift wrap box. And it's the kind of love song where the singer is singing about how great he is, not how much he loves his girlfriend, but really how much he loves himself.
Right.
And this became one of the most viewed online things. It just went viral. So before we hear it, just tell us about writing this and performing it. It's so much fun. Go ahead.
The weird thing about the couple of things, digital shorts that I've done with Andy and the Lonely Island guys, is that it really, you know, for instance, we wrote the song in a delirium of no sleep on a Wednesday or Thursday of the week, and then we recorded it that night, and we were laughing so hysterically, and like I said before, probably through the delirium of not being able to sleep and trying to write something funny, this came out of it, and we knew that it would be funny on some level because we were laughing with each other on the Friday that we filmed the video, and then Saturday morning they edited it, and Saturday night it was put out on television. So interestingly enough, how you described it, that these guys were so self-absorbed that there could never be a question in their mind that this wasn't the greatest Christmas gift of all time. And
are there just like so many songs performers who seem to be that?
Well, maybe the song is funny to people because it speaks so much to the male population and how self-absorbed we all are.
So you started performing when you were so young. I mean, if you go on the internet, people can see you at age 11 on Star Search singing a country and western
right.
song. So, like, whose idea was it to start performing on TV that young? Was it you? Was it your parents?
As soon as I sort of discovered the stage, I think that it just brought out a lot of a lot in me that I didn't know that I had, and it did it at a very young age, and it was one of the most fun things that I could ever do. You know, I begged my mother for voice lessons and guitar lessons and anything I could do to sort of, I wanted to be really good at it. I wanted to learn how to do it the right way. I knew that I had a good ear in my father, my biological father has an amazing voice and music kind of runs in my family. But I knew that there was a sort of a right way to sing and I wanted to learn that.
So your grandfather was a Baptist minister, and I think your father now directs a church choir. Was the church your first stage?
It was actually. It was my father doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, okay.
But he did at the time when I was very young, and it was the first time I had sort of stepped on stage to sing. And I don't know if you know much about sort of a Southern Baptist church, but no one puts in a bad performance there. You know, it's a very nurturing place to step on a stage and sing, because even if you're really bad, people still say amen at the end. And
so, what did you sing?
I can't remember what the songs were. I think there was something from the hymnal that I sang with my father, and I sang the harmony to something that he was singing, and that was my first sort of...
Oh, of course. So you learned to harmonize in the church. That would make sense.
Right. I learned to harmonize listening to a choir sing, you know, 3- and 4-part harmonies, and so that's kind of where I got my ear from. But yeah, like I said, that's a very nurturing place to step on stage, because no one's going to get booed church.
So I watched the clip of you at age 11 on Star Search with Ed McMahon, and some really interesting things about that include that you're singing a country song, and you're dressed in kind of, you know, country clothing with the country kind of belt and the hat, and the dancers
I appreciate you reminding me of all of this.
You're welcome, yes. But, you know, the funny thing, I love, like, kiddie talent shows, because what always happens on those is that the children are coached by older people to perform like performers from older generations. And there's always some, like, really weird disconnect to see, like, a 10-year-old pretending like he's Sammy Davis or something, you know?
Right. A 10-year-old pretending like he's Alan Jackson.
Exactly. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
What was that like for you? I mean, to...
Well, it was a very surreal experience. I auditioned for that show at a mall in Memphis, Tennessee, at an open call audition, and I mean, it was a line, you know, at that time, Star Search was our version of American Idol. It was the biggest talent show in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I got booked on the show, and I was at Disney World, and I was 10, and, you know, I mean, it was a big deal for me, and if not for anything, I had a blast at the theme parks.
Okay, well, speaking of Disney World, you went on to be on the new Mickey Mouse Club. And what was the audition for that like?
The Disney MGM Studios, where Star Search was filmed, was a double soundstage. And next door to the soundstage of Star Search was the Disney Channel's new MMC. So the serendipity of it is I lost the first round on Star Search, and we were on our way home. And there was an open call audition in Hendersonville, Tennessee. It just came on the television in between commercials, and it said, open call audition at this place for the Disney Channel's MMC. And my mom said, you want to give it a go before we go home? And we're just going home. So I went in and auditioned for it, and then got a call back and went to sort of a casting camp a week period of casting camp where, you know, all the kids who were sort of spawned out of that show, we met for the first time. Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and Ryan Gosling, and there were 21 kids who were whittled down by I think 20,000 that they had done auditions with all over the country. And out of those 21 kids, I think 7 of us were picked to be the new part of the cast. And when you're a kid and things like that happen, and it happens so fast, you know, you can't help but feel like, you know, something great was happening for you. But I look back on it, and I think it was more of a fluke than anything.
So after a couple of seasons on the Mickey Mouse Club, you ended up being in one of the famous boy bands, NSYNC. Did that feel like a totally synthetic, or did it feel more organic as a group?
Well, everything that we did was based around a cappella harmonies. That's that's what we wanted to be in the beginning. We sort of wanted to be an a cappella group, and so that was why we put five guys in the group. And when we were forming the group, there wasn't a boy band phenomenon. You know, Nirvana was, and Pearl Jam were probably the top two acts in the world at the time. And you know, we never knew at what capacity everything was going to work out for us. I don't think that we thought it was going to be as big as it became.
Justin Timberlake speaking to Terry Gross in 2010. We'll continue their conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2010 interview with performer Justin Timberlake. He's just released his first solo album in 7 years, called The 2020 Experience, and has confirmed that before the year is out, he'll release a companion volume.
You've talked a little bit about singing and learning to sing when you were young. What about dancing? Like, did you study dancing? Did you study with break dancers or with more traditional choreographers?
I wish that I would have taken more, I guess there's still time, but I wish that I would have taken more technical dance. I'd taken a couple of technical dance classes, but I learned more how to dance just as a product of watching MTV and being around, like you said, break dancers and clubs. I really started getting into breakdancing pretty hard and learning the technicality of it. I broke my thumb twice in a row. And I think that's when I said, you know, I think I'm just going to stay on my feet. I'm going to keep my feet below my head as it's intended.
Were you trying to spin on your head or something when that happened?
Yeah. My head spun me instead of me spinning on my head. It was, wasn't a pretty sight. So I think right then and there I decided that I would sort of, you know, I find that every time I write music or come up with an idea for a record, that whatever it is that I come up with, I feel like I have a specific aesthetic that goes with it, very much like creating a character. I find that I describe that to people, and sometimes they respond to it and sometimes they don't. But for instance, my last album, Future Sex Love Sounds, was a character that I created, much like, you know, obviously not the same way that David Bowie would create something like Ziggy Stardust, you know, but, you know, something that aspired to be a character.
What was the character that you were seeing?
I don't know. I just saw it as someone who I saw, I guess for some reason I saw some mixture between like 007 character, but also an ode to like Fred Astaire. Mm-hmm. In a way, or Gene Kelly. I think I saw it as an ode to that, but how could I take that and make it sound modern? And so when the aesthetic of it came into play, I wanted to play the part. I wanted to play it. I did feel like I was creating sort of a character that could maybe fall into a Kubrick film or a Helmut Newton photo or... You know, I just saw a lot of images in my mind after we had looked back and created it.
Well, let's take "Sexy Back" as an example. Your voice is processed on part of that. Why did you want that?
You know, I'm not actually even singing on the song. You know,
what does
I remember
that mean?
When. Well, I'm more sort of talking in tone. More than singing in that song. And I don't know where that line came from. I sometimes regret it because I feel like people feel like it's an extension of who I am. But when I feel like when I get the opportunity to tell them that I felt like I was playing a character, sometimes they get it and sometimes they don't. You know, for whatever reason, when we started recording it, I wanted the vocal to sort of almost slap you in the face. I wanted it to sound like it was distorted. And so I just got the idea that when if we put it through a simulated guitar amp or an effect like that, it's a very sparse sounding record because there's no in between the parts that I'm actually performing the record, there's just the sound of these weird, quirky, computerized gimmicks. I felt like if anyone ever took dance music and applied a rock and roll frame of mind to it with bravado and sort of rock star-ism, that's what we were trying to capture, and it was just a moment. And I, like I said, I sometimes regret that I wrote it that way, but also not, because it was a moment and it was fun and I had fun writing it. And when I see people sing it back to me, you know, when you cut to me standing on stage in Copenhagen for 80,000 people and they're all singing the song, and there's something so unabashed and fun and unbridled about their feeling with that song. So I felt like it was mission accomplished.
Okay, so after that great description, we have to hear it. This is my guest, Justin Timberlake, singing Sexy Back.
I'm bringing sexy back. Yeah. The mother boys don't know how to act. Yeah. I think it's special what's behind your back. So turn around and I'll pick up the slack.
Yeah. Take up to the bridge.
Dirty babe. You see these shackles, baby, I'm your slave. I'll let you whip me if I misbehave. It's just that no one makes me feel this way.
Take up to the chorus.
Come here, girl.
Go ahead, be gone with it.
Come to the back.
Go ahead, be gone with it.
VIP.
Go ahead, be gone with it.
Drinks on me.
Go ahead.
I'm bringing sexy back.
That was Justin Timberlake, recorded in 2006, one of his big solo hits. So that's really fun to listen back to. what was it like for you going solo as opposed to like being in a group? You know, being more having all the responsibility, the main responsibility on your shoulders.
Well, it was comfortable. I think growing up as an only child probably had more to do with that than anything. But I had music that I was ready to express, and I don't think it was an extension of the other guys in the group. And so I think it was a natural progression. That there was timing that was involved with some of the other guys aspiring to do other things as well. And so there was a little bit of serendipity to that. But also I think naturally it still would have taken its course that I would have ended up doing solo work, just because I think that I had different music inside of me that I wanted to express.
So you are so lucky. You were a child star and survived. I mean, seriously, like the things that you learned as a child star were probably like so helpful in learning, you know, like show business and dancing and singing and acting. But at the same time, it ruins so many people. Like so many people who are lucky enough to have that kind of early fame never recover. So do you have any sense of what it was that has kept you?
I think I would just chalk that up to amazing parents and amazing mother. You know, my
I hope
parents,
she's listening.
I'm almost positive she's listening right now. She's very proud, but I would chalk that up to an amazing mother. She's you know, my biological parents divorced when I was right around the time I turned one, and my mother remarried my stepdad when I was five, and right after I turned five. And so, you know, there was a period of time where I had to get used to sort of a man that wasn't related to me by blood. And you know, she always made everything so comfortable for me, and she always spoke to me like I was her peer. I think the thing that she's sort of embedded in my brain is if you have the ability to do something, one or two things, great. It doesn't mean that you're a better person than anyone else. And the accolades that I receive personally from what I do are more comments you would get from people that say your music helped them through a rough time, or saying that you made them laugh, rather than, you know, materialistic awards or things like that. But I would chalk it up to a great mother who's always taught me that we all put our pants on one leg at a time. So,
well, Justin Timberlake, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I am such a fan, and
wow.
I was so excited to be on the show.
I'm very excited to hear you say that.
Justin Timberlake speaking to Terry Gross in 2010. His new album is called The 2020 Experience.